nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Welcome, listeners, to Radio Miraya. This is me, Gabriel Shadar, with the Nationwide program. And today we have my guests in the studio, and we will be focusing on the release of three reports by the Ministry of Petroleum. That is a report on petroleum, human resource policy manual, and petroleum local content. And these reports are important because they are coming out after 3 years, almost 3 years, since the last report was out. So with me today in the studio are the Undersecretary in the Ministry of Petroleum, Engineer Mr. Awo Daniel Chong. Welcome to our studios.
Thank you.
Yes, and also with me in the studio is Engineer Mr. Mohammed Lino, Technical Advisor for the Ministry of Petroleum. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Yes, and of course, as these reports are coming out after 3 years, maybe it might be surprising that it might be surprising for some people wondering why reports are coming out after 3 years and the ministry has not stopped working. Yes, any one of you can pick that question.
Yeah, I think this report for us is not surprising because the first time we released the report was in 2012 and then it continued up to 2015. But there was a pause from around 2015 up to 2019 where we started to release the report. But all those reports were there, but of course, the situation didn't allow us actually for that time. Within that time for us to release the reports. So we have been working and all the reports have been ready ever since, but it's only that they were not published. So for us, it's a work that was continuing and now that's why we have released them today.
Mm-hmm. These reports are about three areas of specializations or means three areas of content. Maybe this the technical advisor, will tell us a little bit about each one, so that we go into more discussions.
Thank you, Gabriel. In fact, I will start first with the petroleum report. Mm. This is a requirement by the Petroleum Act 2012 that the Ministry of Petroleum make public all the information regarding oil production and sales and proceeds. So specifically, this is in Chapter 17, Sections 75, 76, 77, 78, and 79. In Section 75, Part 3, is about publishing proceeds from the sales of data. And here, I must mention, there is a little bit of confusion. People get confused when you talk about what is to be published and what is actually to be kept confidential. In fact, some of the data that are being generated in the oil sector, some of them are valuable data and they are sometimes sold to investors this is generating the country also money. And this data is not supposed to be released to the public. But the law requires that once you sell the data, the sales or the proceeds from this data sale must be published. This is in Section 75. In Section 76 is about all the production that is being produced in the oil field must be released or published. And this is what we have done with the current release of today and also the previous releases as mentioned by the Undersecretary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In Section 77, 1 and 2, A to E, is about public access in general. It tells how the public can access the data. In Section 78, 1 to 4, is about the disclosure specifically of all the payments made against oil sales. Section 79 tells us about the manner in which this information should be made public. For example, the report that we are currently releasing today or launching today is one of the means how to make the data public. The Undersecretary also today in his speech mentioned about the website whereby all these reports will be made available. So these are the manner in which all these reports will be made, all the data will be made public. Now, coming to the Unified Human Resource Policy Manual, this has been an issue since we started in 2012, and also not only in 2012 in South Sudan, but also in Sudan. Because if you don't have a Unified Human Resource Policy Manual, sometimes it creates imbalance or instability in the oil sector. Some will be moving to the areas where they feel the payment is much better, and some will be actually quitting from other areas because they felt the payment was not good. So this is why, and not only this, it also regulates the manner in which people should be recruited in the oil sector. So this manual is very key and very important. The last document, which is the local content, you know, when we are starting to invest in the oil sector, we bring companies that are experts from abroad. They are investing, but we don't have the capabilities. So the intention is to build the capability of the local companies and entities so that they also can grow and become international companies. So these are the meaning of these three documents that were launched today. They have, each one is handling a very specific key area in the oil sector.
Mm-hmm. This is revealing, of course. And when it comes to the production, and it is very helpful that you have said there are things that are meant for the consumption of the companies and the ministry and officials, policymakers, because this is business. You can go on displaying everything you have. This is highly competitive field. In that area, people are focusing what is the level of production, how much barrel are we producing, how much have we sold, and all that kind of things. But for the public, and when it comes to these issues of petroleum production, what is the things that you feel the public should be aware of, and you would like to tell the public to know them? Yes, Undersecretary, I can.
Thank you, Mr. Gabriel. I think the public have the right to know specifically how much are we producing, which means the production they need to know. The second thing, they need to know how much are we generating out of oil. And these are the key information that will help us as people of South Sudan and also our friends and international community and friends to know that we are being transparent, because there's nothing that we are supposed to be hiding. As long as these are public resources, they are owned by the people of South Sudan, and that's why it is very clearly made in our constitution and the Petroleum Act as well, that there is a need for us to open up, for the people to know exactly what we are doing, and this is exactly what we have been doing in regards to the availability of information that people should have access to. But when it comes to other data, because when you talk about data like what Mr. Advice have said earlier, in petroleum industry, the data is so huge. It's knowledge intensive, and the data is so massive. And at times, you don't need to expose all your data. Okay, that would not be needed by anyone, for instance. But of course, the data that will be required by the people, we know how to segregate them. And it's obviously very straightforward. If somebody asks about oil, they want to know how much are we producing and how much did we sell it. You see, the moment they know that, they don't care about the geology, they don't care about the technical challenges that we're facing, they don't care about the characteristics of the reservoir, the facilities. This technical data, of course, we cannot release them because these are confidential when we come to this. But that's why we cannot release, like geological data, for instance. But if it comes to production data, then there's a need for anyone to know. All the government institutions should know, and all the public should know as well.
Given all these technicalities and that necessary kind of reserved attitude towards revealing facts, can you confirm that the Ministry of Petroleum in the last 3 years that is being covered in the report is transparent enough to the public?
100%, I can tell you, because there's no need, there's no way that any information can be hidden, because the oil industry is not like any other industry. Okay, it is being spotted and followed by so many people whether within South Sudan or South Sudan. So even if you have intention of hiding information, you cannot do that. Yeah, the only way for you to make it public is just to give the right information, because at the end it can be cross-checked, like I said earlier, in our launching, that you can even cross-check, which means we are even challenging anybody to tell us otherwise.
The man on the street, Mr. Undersecretary Awo Daniel, is suffering from the economic crisis, and in the minds of people, they think about our oil, or this. So how assuring is the situation to the public?
Well, you know, I think these are the important issues that people should understand, because if I assume that we are producing oil and I put any figure on my mind, then of course the expectation can be very high, while the reality is different. And that's why it's also very important for us to reveal the right information, okay, the correct information that anyone can verify, so that you also know that you should keep your expectation within those limits, because we know that the oil that we're producing is also limited, and we have so many challenges that we're facing, and the country has a lot of obligations, you know, when it comes to the payment of the tariff to Sudan. You know, we are now selling oil to Sudan, okay, and this oil will pay back for the TFA, which is called Transition Financial Arrangement, and that as well, the fees that we are paying to Sudan. So if you remember well, the fees that is being charged by Sudan is $24.1 for Nile Blend, for Dar Blend, and then $26 per barrel for Nile Blend. So if you imagine these figures, and then now you look into the production that we are producing today, and the shares of the companies that are investing, they'll have to take their shares, you know, because when we have the physical regime that is well designed within the EFSAs, there are, you know, provisions that gives us the entitlement, which is already agreed in the agreements. You'll have your share, the government will have their shares, and then, of course, the cost will have its share as well. So when it comes to the cost is so high, being exacerbated by the TFA that is being imposed on Sudan, which is an additional cost to South Sudan. So when you look into this, you can see a very big production volume, but at the end, you'll see that the production that comes as a net to the government is very little, you see. But when people see the production is 170, they believe that, okay, the whole volume must be multiplied by the price, which is not true, you see. You have to deduct the cost. You have to deduct all the costs, and that's why you will end up getting little. You see? And this little is what is causing the economic crisis that we're having in the country.
The question is, when is this TFA going to end?
Well, TFA is supposed to finish actually 3.5 years when it was designed in the first place, but it didn't end because we were not able to reduce the volume that will cover, you know, the amount that was, you know, said to be paid, because it was $3.028 billion that is supposed to be paid within the 3.5 years. But of course the prices changed, and even we were not comfortable actually in the petroleum, because we felt that the price of oil have dropped to more than a quarter, and at the same time the production has dropped, which means it will take us even longer for us to pay the TFA, because TFA is a sum of money, a bulk of money that we need to clear, but we are happy that at least we are now close. Yeah, maybe after 1.5 years or maybe 2 years, we should be able to clear the TFA, because the production has dropped and the price has dropped as well, and we could not be able to pay it.
So that is in terms of time, but what does it mean in terms of the remaining money? In as you are speaking about 2 billion something, how much is remaining now?
Well, I think we are quite below maybe 500 or 400 something now. So which means we have paid the majority of it. Mm-hmm. It's already paid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are left with something little. But still, even this little amount of money
is
a lot of money for us to pay.
Yeah, if the government is, I don't know how the government is getting every month from the
That's correct.
Production
now. And a very simple example I can tell you. Hmm. Yeah, if we take for an example our production in Dar Petroleum, every month we'll have a cargo of 600,000 barrels, okay, a month. And then Sudan, okay, they take 840. So you can see that Sudan is taking more, you see. And they're taking more simply because they have to get their TFA paid, and they have to get their processing and transportation fees and transit fees paid as well. So all these fees will erode the value of the crude oil that we are producing. Mm-hmm. Again.
Any addition from the technical advisor on these questions I've just raised to the undersecretary?
Thank you very much, Gabriel. I think no much addition except mm-hmm. that we are now exerting a lot of efforts to make sure that we also increase production, as has been mentioned today by the Honorable Minister. But of course there are challenges that require to be overcome first before we can bring up the production. And we are also hopeful that the oil price is kept stable at this level or even go up, because dropping of the oil prices also create more problems and less revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I get back to the question about the Unified Human Resource Manual. What should the public know about this? Because there's a lot of speculation about even internal issues that are coming out about the local staff, national staff, experts, and all these kind of things, investors and subcontractors and all that kind of things. So what is the solutions that are coming out from this manual, Unified Manual?
The Unified Human Resource Policy Manual will guide us in how to get the people recruited and how to get them paid, because the payment, of course, is very important for us to know. And this is what has created a lot of problems since 2011. Mm. And this one was actually inherited from Sudan, because when you get the payment in all the JOCs, which is a joint operating companies, they get payments differently, which means they are not being guided. And it's the role of the government to make sure that they are being guided. You see, in the absence of guidance, then any company can put a package that is different from the other company while they are doing the same thing. And for us in South Sudan, we believe that whoever works in the oil industry and in any capacity must be enumerated the same way his colleagues are being enumerated the same way. So we don't want to create a disparity. So this Unified Human Resource Manual, Policy Manual, will guide us and will guide the companies as well. So it will not actually affect the public directly, but it will be indirectly, because their family members who are working in the oil industry, of course, will benefit from this. But it is not meant actually for the public consumption, but it's used specifically for the JOCs and those who are interested in oil. And tomorrow, those who are aspiring as well to be employed in the oil industry, they will know that there's a guiding policy that will be used by the government for them to be recruited or even to be, you know, discontinued in their work and all the stuff that are not there, because it is actually a policy that will make the efficiency of those who are working and performance better. Because if we don't have employees and staff that are being paid well and they don't live in a good working environment, then obviously you will not expect out of them anything else, anything more than just complaining. You know, they'll be complaining all the time. But of course, if the problems that they are facing is being addressed right from the policy, makers and from the regulators, then obviously they'll be comfortable and they will perform. And as they perform, of course, they will also add value to their, to their companies. And by doing so, of course, we'll have more oil that we are expecting.
And some of the concerns that have come out from the nationals and also the populations are interrelated. Like people in the local community, that they are saying, we are not being employed, we are not being considered. When the reality is also that some of the positions are really technical intensive. They require know-how, which might not be available in the local communities. And then you have the operational kind of requirements that cannot really allow so many people to be employed, and that is another factor. And then you have, from the other hand, the national employees who are working there. They're saying, we are exposed to risks, and we don't get adequate and consideration and all these kind of things. Is there any good news for these kind of two categories?
Gabriel, as you rightly put it, there used to be a lot of irregularities and issues that need to be addressed. And we believe that this manual will actually address a lot of these issues. Of course, it's not perfect, but we believe that it's going to address a lot of them. One of them you mentioned is this complaint by the local communities in terms of not being employed. And as you mentioned, employment is just not anything. You need to know who can be recruited at the right place. The manual actually spells this out clearly. Not only this, we have actually usually being accused that the employment in the industry is based on nepotism, is based on all these lot of things. So the policy now outlines clearly how the recruitment should be done in a transparent and in a fair manner, which will actually ensure that everybody will get their chance into the recruitment when you have the qualifications and you have the competencies required for that.
Advisor, technical advisor Muhammad Lino, you are really an expert in this field, and you have been even working since the country was won and so forth. It might take somebody with surprise that such manual, very important manual, is coming out after all these years of our being independent of our being also producing oil. What is the justification for this delay?
Thank you very much. In fact, thank God that it came out at this time. In fact, we started to work on this since 2012. And we had a version that we actually wanted to implement in 2012. But situation and conditions did not allow. And so we continued. But later on, we were also distracted by a lot of issues that came up. I think you are also aware of some of them. Mm-hmm. We had crisis in the country. We had oil production shut down. Mm. We had oil prices drop. So all this didn't also give us the chance to work closely on the manual. And this also, we needed also to have a lot of inputs and a lot of close study of to see how what is the best way to come up with. So this time taken, I believe, is also justified by that the document should come up with the best solutions for how to address the employment issue.
Mm-hmm. Back to the question of production, Mr. Undersecretary Awo Daniel, the world is moving fast, and when it comes to oil production, people are using what they call a state-of-the-art, including machinery, acceleration, and all that kind of things. What is coming up with the ministry or in the pipeline with the ministry in improving how oil is being produced? Because we are hearing that the wells are aging, some of the technologies are not really up to date, and also kind of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Gabriel. I think the oil industry in South Sudan has a lot of challenges when it comes to production, and when it comes also to management of the environment. You see, these are the key areas that we are focused on, and I think we have been able to work some plans that is actually helping, and it will help actually in the future to minimize the impact of the oil production on the environment. Mm. And at the same time, we are coming up also with plans of enhancement of the oil production, because if you have reserves are limited, and as you continue to produce, they deplete. The production has been on for the last, few years, since the time of One Sudan up to now. And as you move on with the production, of course, there's something called natural decline. It declines, it automatically declines. The production declines as a result of so many factors, you see. And for you to cope up with the production levels that you need to deploy technology. And this technology is very important for us to increase the production from one hand, and at the same time, to be able to work out plans of how to mitigate the impact on the environment. Because as you produce more, then you'll expect also more damages to the environment. Yeah. So now we have launched good plans actually for us to have the oil enhancement in place. And we are going to start, and we even contracted some consultants as we speak to work out some plans of enhancement, and then. The issues of the water that is making most of the pollution in the oil fields is water. Actually, I can tell you maybe 80% of this pollution comes from water, and we're working also plans of how do we reduce the volume of water that comes to the surface, because this water basically comes from the ground, underground, with the crude oil, to the level of not less than 78% and 80%. So when you extract 100 barrel, then 80 barrels is out of this is water, you see. And this water is so poisonous because it contains a lot of minerals that comes from the ground, and it contains salts, and it's so concentrated, so it cannot be used, actually. So we are also working with the joint operating companies, JOCs, to make sure that we reduce the amount of water that comes to the surface first by deploying a technology of reinjection. Okay, we have to reinject back the water. This is one solution that has already started, although we have not reached the level where we can inject 100% of water. Mm-hmm. But I think around 80%, 40% is already being injected at the moment. Mm-hmm. So we are still left with something like 60%. So we want to increase the capacity of the reinjection back of this water, which means we are going to reduce a lot the use of this surface water, you know, that can cause problem on the environment. And then we try to treat water as well. So it's a combination of solutions that we're going to introduce, which means it takes, you know, a new technology for us to treat the water on the surface and then inject them back into the formations.
Yeah, so much concerns and also questions have been raised about this issue of water, which is about environment. So last time I spoke to you a couple of months back, you spoke about that you were almost having an environmental audit being announced or given to an international company. Where are we with that?
Well, I think the best person who can answer this is the advisor himself, because he's the one heading the
advisor.
Give an update. And it's very
important. Thank you, Gabriel, for bringing up this issue. This is also one of the key issues we want the public to know. In fact, we started this process since last year when Honorable Awo was the Minister of Petroleum. By then, he formed a committee that embarked on starting to work for the environmental audit. You know, the key thing we needed to have in place was the scope of work. What is really that thing that we wanted to check and how to check? So we worked out the scope of work. We also invited companies to phase one, which we call phase one, which is actually pre-qualification. And we actually had a number of companies, international companies, regional and local companies that applied. We screened them and we shortlisted the companies. We are now in stage two, which is just about to start. It's only this, I think, the period of Christmas that is keeping us, but otherwise we would have announced this in the last few, the last days, to invite those companies to collect the tender document, which has already been prepared, to start making their proposals. And we expect in January we will be receiving those proposals to start evaluation and hire the contractors or the companies that will start doing the environmental audit. So this is the stage we are in now. We are ready to invite all the companies that are shortlisted to come and collect the tender document, but this will be announced officially I think maybe right after Christmas.
There's a question that might be even in the scope of the government to act on, that the population who came back after CPA and also after independence, because some of them were really chased away from near the oil field. After independence, many communities came back and stayed very near to the proximity of the wells and so forth. This is something that doesn't need a lot of technicalities, but just to keep the people away. Where are we with that? Because this is posing them to risks.
Gabriel, I think I will also go for answering this question.
Yeah.
This is an issue that we also ourselves are working to manage, because, you know, we were surprised. At the beginning, when we started the oil fields, the population was almost not there, or very few. And suddenly, the population is started to grow very fast. Even managing the population that comes is also an issue. We were also confronted with the issue that this population was actually originally there, and we were not aware of that. But now we came to the reality that these people want to come back to their original areas where they were staying. So we had to also try to see what are the best way to manage this population, and also to avoid them being subjected to the risk of the facilities and also the risk of oil production and whatever is associated with it. Some of them were relocated. Some of them, actually, we tried to manage them within the vicinity of the oil fields. But it's still an issue that is still need to be actually taken care of to make sure that this is solved completely. But it will take time.
Yeah, Undersecretary, Mr. Undersecretary Awo Daniel, perhaps this is not in the scope of your powers only. It needs other kind of legislation, enforcement, and all this kind of community involvement. What would you say as a recommendation that, and how to keep people away from the risks? Because this for me is like the best option to keep people as much as away as possible from the oil fields, and that means from contamination.
Yeah, thank you. I think you're right, and I quite agree with that, because the scope of work of the Ministry of Petroleum and their mandate is limited in a way, that we cannot also force the communities out of their areas, because it needs also legislation, like you said. And I could well remember some times back, I think some communities also refused to move from their areas, and there's no way that we can force them. You see, at the very beginning, there was an area that was developed early on in Faloy, and we had wanted them to move, but it was very difficult. So, which means we need also intervention of the other government institution, maybe like legislation, for them to help us, especially the MPs from the area, to help them move from those areas. And the intention of the oil industry is to make sure that the areas that are being used as an operation area should be empty from people, because it reduces the risk. Even
this
the companies.
This is how it is all over the world, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So yeah, we are working on that. And I remember when the demonstration were on a few months ago, this is one of the areas. This is one of the things that was mentioned by some of the demonstrators, that we wanted to be relocated. What I said is good news if some people can agree to that, because we want them also to be relocated. But of course, it had to be like a collective responsibility from the government institutions that are related to this work, and even the state and the local authorities, for us to coordinate. How do we do that? Because at the end, if you want to build like model villages, for instance, these model villages will not only be built by the oil companies. The government also has to be part of that, you know, the local government and then the central government, and as well as the oil companies, because at the end the services that will be required will be massive, and the oil companies' scope is only limited to some work only that they can do. They can create like access road, they can create like some water, they can create some small things here and there, but of course for them to have a good neighborhood or a good village, I think it takes a lot of effort and time. And of course, you know, the will of the people to move to those areas.
But yeah. Given your experience, Muhammad Lino, and main advisor, how easy is this option?
I think as the undersecretary mentioned, it's not an easy option. You know, if these things were considered at the beginning of the project, you know, the oil fields are now aging. They are close to at the end of what was the initial period of the contract. So in setting additional cost on the project will actually require a lot of effort to make sure that it's going to make it viable. So as the Undersecretary mentioned, we will also need the intervention of the other sectors of the government to come together with the Ministry of Petroleum. Of course, the part of the oil sector will contribute greatly to this, but other sectors also will be required to intervene, so that is a collective effort.
Listeners, Radio Mirror, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, and with me in the studio are the Undersecretary of the Ministry of Petroleum, Mr. and Engineer Awo Daniel Chong, and also Engineer Mr. Muhammad Lino, Technical Advisor for the Ministry of Petroleum. And we are discussing the release of three reports. That is a petroleum report and unified human resource policy manual and petroleum local content. And as we are coming to the last minutes, I would like to give some of the listeners a few minutes if they want to ask questions, and also you can send an SMS on some of the issues that might be of comment or of concern to you. And until that, let me get back to my guests in the studio. And now the country seems to have a lot of undeveloped, unexplored areas of petrol, of oil. People speak about jungle, people speak about other parts of Unity, even up to Arab and other areas in lakes and all that kind of things. What is also hindering the quickening of the operationalization or exploration in this? Where are we exactly in terms of exploration? Because oil fields are aging, we need more money, we need to advance fast, Undersecretary.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a very important question for us, specifically in Ministry of Petroleum, because we understand that there is a need for us to explore for more oil. This is very important, because the oil that we're having at the moment is depleting, as I said earlier on. And for it to deplete, we need to replenish the reserves. We need to compensate for the reserves, at least, or to make sure that we have more reserves so that we can continue to produce oil for a long time. And we cannot do this without exploration. And in fact, what is hindering the exploration in South Sudan is the readiness of the country to receive new investors. This is one problem, because the uncertainties that is there, and then the crisis that we had over the last few years, is what has hindered the coming of investors to South Sudan. Because usually the exploration is done by foreign oil companies, you see, for them to do the work. But of course, most of them will not come if they feel that there's still war in South Sudan. But from last year, when the government was about to be formed, we actually launched a program of a licensing round. Licensing round is like a bidding round for the new blocks. We have demarcated around 14 blocks at the moment. 14 blocks in South Sudan has been demarcated. And the only difficult thing is the data that we need. Because, you know, when you demarcate the block, you need to acquire some data as well. Because for you to attract serious investors to the country, you need to generate some data. And this data, for you to generate, is not an easy task. And for you even to collect this data from different sources in the world is not an easy task. So this is the task that we have taken upon ourselves since last year. And we have been able to move very well on that for the first time, actually, since independence. And as we speak, we have like 4 blocks to be announced, you know, in the first licensing round. It was only delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic that has, raged in the world. And we could not, of course, do it at that time, because nobody will come to South Sudan, during the time of COVID-19, mm-hmm. and as well in so many places in the world. So we postponed it because of that. Mm-hmm. And we had wanted to have a conducive environment where we can run licensing round in a very conducive environment, yeah. where people can come to South Sudan, where we can also travel to other places like America, like UK, so that we make announcement for this, because you cannot do it locally here. Mm-hmm. It has to be out there. So these plans are already on, and we are going to start it again by the beginning of next year. It is only because of the second COVID-19, wave that has also hindered again our proposal. But these proposals are ready. And we are ready to roll it out, perhaps by the first quarter or the second quarter of next year.
My last question in just 3 minutes is to technical advisor Muhammad Lino. We spoke. One of you mentioned that the local companies need to be upgraded also, so that they can take local ownership, because this cannot continue forever. There must be a time where South Sudanese themselves take up. Where are we now with that, and is there any hope that some local companies will be really taking up on your advisor?
Thank you very much. Yes, of course, we are moving. Oil industry is a high tech, is also a capital intensive industry. Mm. So to build strong companies that will take up projects at the level of the world is not an easy thing. It will take years. But we are sure that the companies that are now going and moving with the support of the Ministry of Petroleum will actually move and go there. Only that it will take time.
Yeah.
We have some companies in specific areas that are not so difficult, are already moving and are already taking jobs that were previously being taken by international companies. But also we have still other high-tech areas that still need to be undertaken by our local companies. They will have to first join up with international companies, because they have the expertise and the capability, and then learn with time. And we expect that this is going to happen, because we know it happened in Sudan. Myself and him, the undersecretary, we were in a Sudabet company in Sudan, and we were also running high-tech companies that were already capable of doing things with the local content.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I give you 1 minute, Mr. Undersecretary, to send a quick message, maybe for Christmas.
No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gabriel. I think we are happy that today we have been able to launch the 3 publications from the Ministry of Petroleum. And this is actually intended to the public to know that we are working very seriously to make sure that whatever they want from us in terms of information is always availed. And this will be now, the starting point, because, most of the data that we have over the years has been breached. There was a gap, and this gap now has been breached already, I can tell them. So they should feel happy and proud that we'll continue to do the same, and we'll also be up to their expectations as we come to tell them exactly what is the production that we are producing every day and every month and every year. And then from there, of course, the other government institutions, of course, will know that the data that we are producing is real data that they can be verified by anybody. And we are happy that this is the message for Christmas, that the transparency that the government is talking about, the transparency that the president has told us that to pursue, and then the revitalized agreement of that was signed, also he's talking about the same thing. So everybody's talking about this transparency, and this is what we want to show the people of South Sudan, that right from now we are moving on. And even our minister have said that instead of us even doing the yearly report, we are going to do like a quarterly report instead, and then at the end we do one report that will summarize the four reports every year. So yeah. I think this is a very good news for us.
Yeah, and now you have succeeded to divert the attention from you, and focus will be on other government institutions to follow suit. And if half of the other institutions are following, I think people will be fine. Thank you very much, Undersecretary Awo Daniel Chuang, and the Secretary of the Ministry of Petroleum, for being with us. Thank you very much, Technical Advisor Mohammed Dino, for being with us on Nationwide.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Merry Christmas for you.
Same
and
too.
Happy New Year in advance.
Thank you.
And that is all from me on Nationwide today. Gabriel Shadar, thanks for listening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.